Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio, and today my guest is Gracie Travis Murphy, who is the president of Heart of Christ, and she works in Honduras teaching authorities and ministries to rescue, to care for, and to restore victims of violence and empower justice. She has taught justice models in three countries, survived five assassination attempts, and is a country condition expert on violence and gangs in Honduras. For the asylum cases in the U.S. immigration courts. Since 2005, she and her husband have lived in Honduras, where they operate a justice center, a victims crisis office, a refuge, and a home for girls pregnant by rape or incest. Gracie, welcome to Living Above the Drama.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. You have quite the story, young lady. It's really quite the story, and you know, I'm looking forward to you sharing it with the audience. Why don't we start where we started in the pre-interview? I had asked you about your background, and you grew up in the same state that we're in, which is Massachusetts. You grew up in the Boston area, in Melrose, and you described a fairly typical dysfunctional family dynamic that you had to compete for affection, and you know, it wasn't the most you know, fulfilling or rewarding upbringing. And then you had a terrible accident. Do you want to tell us about the event where you were drugged and raped and became pregnant, and what ensued from there?
Yes, when I was 21 years old, I had dated a gentleman on two dates, and on the third date, he gave me a drink with a drug in it, had sex with me, and I became pregnant. And my own pastor told me to abort the baby, but I did not. I had my daughter. And after that, it was evidence of how I wasn't good enough, all the things that I'd ever heard. I got married to a man who was addicted to drugs. I asked him to choose the drugs and the children and God and me. I mean, choose God and me and the children over the drugs. And he chose the drugs and sent him to rehab. He came back. Sent him back to rehab, got kicked out. I dated a man who was an alcoholic, and he abused me. And it was just a series of events like this in my life.
Right. And that's pretty typical coming from, you know, a dysfunctional family where self-respect and regard and love and affection is withheld. So after you were done with the alcoholic and, you know, you left your first husband, you started to go after a dream of yours, right? So you want to tell us about that, because that's a good part of the story, and it just keeps getting better from there.
Yes, I had always wanted to be a writer. I had left Boston for Alabama. And in beginning to write, I got to know other writers, and the poet laureate for Illinois told me to go back to school. And so I did go back to school. There were grants that were available for single mothers, and with the freelancing that I was doing and the grants from school, I was able to study and to work and to get my degree in English and journalism and communications and criminal justice.
So you had a minor in criminal justice, yeah?
It was basically a general studies degree with different focuses within the degree.
Yeah, I guess they do that more now, which is really quite exciting, because you can have a range of subjects that you're actually studying at the same time. So it's quite wonderful. So at that same time, you were also writing for Christian TV on CBS, and you had you were freelance writing, and you were doing some of the news and some other things. So you know, tell us about how you pulled that off. I thought it was pretty cool because you had two children and you were able to do that. So what kind of support did you have there?
Well, I was basically there alone. I had some friends that I knew through writing, but there was no family there. And I was getting the grants from school that helped with tuition and room and board. And I was freelancing for the Boston Globe, and I was writing for the Christian television station. It was just all encouragement by other writers. I was doing book reviews for New York publishers and interviewing authors for feature interviews. My internship for my degree included 6 months writing the 5:30 a.m. News show for the CBS station in Mobile and producing it. And so I just had one lucky streak after another, or blessed streak after another.
Right. And so this is what the reason, you know, I really want you to share this is it's evidence that when we go through trauma and we have these terrible setbacks, although we can't often see it at the time, we might go through a series of really, really traumatic and really difficult, you know, challenges and conflicts. And then all of a sudden things start opening up. So you started counseling and advocating for women, right? You've been doing that almost your whole life, right?
Yes, my whole life.
And then you got to a point where you needed to talk to someone yourself. So tell us the story how you met your husband. It's quite an interesting one because, and then we're going to get to the work that you're doing. I just want to interject and say that Gracie is involved in a really moving, important, and urgent mission. To me, you're working as a missionary and, you know, as a faith minister, and it's really quite wonderful because we can look around very quickly in the world today and see the trauma and the pain and the suffering that is going on right before our eyes. And to have that balanced, I don't know how you feel about this, Gracie, but I really feel that if I had like a lot of money, I would put ads in the New York Times that would invite people to pray back to bringing peace and to bringing kindness back into the world, because we're living in such a harsh time. So tell us about how you, you know, said, I need to talk to somebody, and you went to a Christian website, and how that whole thing evolved with you meeting your husband.
Well, I had been counseling a young woman, and I didn't know what next step to take. There was basically a crisis that hit that was bigger than what I felt I could do on my own. So I went on a Christian online group in the afternoon when I had gotten home from the university. And the people there, they just were talking subjects that I wasn't really interested in. And when I asked them, you know, are you guys really Christians? They attacked me, so I left. But having been involved with an online writers community, I knew that the theme could be different later. So I went back at like 9 o'clock at night. And while I was there, the same thing. And I was literally about to leave. I had that arrow over the X, and I saw anyone here from Alabama on the chat room screen, looked up the bio of the person, and it was a minister, a gentleman who was a minister. And I thought, perfect, I'll talk to him. And so I said I was from Alabama, and a chat box came up, and we began talking, and he gave me the advice I needed. And I thought that was the end of it. After that, the next day, he communicated with me again, and we talked back and forth for a while. And then we started talking on the phone. And my son was going to Boston to visit his father for the summer. So I decided to go meet this person. I was meeting his parents and his family, so it was all safe. I'd already investigated him, and he really was a pastor of this church and really owned this business. So I went to meet with them, and we got to know each other better, and he wanted to have a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, and I was terrified. I did not want to. My baggage was too dark, too heavy, too dirty to be the girlfriend of a pastor. And
well, so you thought.
So I thought, yeah.
Yeah.
But you see, God has other plans. You know, I was literally terrified to kiss him. I thought God would strike me dead with lightning. But when I prayed about it, the Lord told me that because I knew the heart and the mind of a woman who'd been abused, or a child who'd been abused, and all of these things, a woman who'd been raped and pregnant, he said that that qualified me more because I knew the hearts and minds of them. And one thing led to another, and we were married in 2000.
Wow, isn't that wonderful? And so, and he also embraced your children, which is so critical, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, when he proposed, I said, stop. I said, before you ask me,
you brought the children over, right?
I said to him, if you want to marry me, you're marrying my children. And if you're not going to be the father they never had, then my answer is going to be no. But he said yes, I said yes, and the rest is 20 years worth of history.
Wow, isn't that wonderful? So what came out of all of this is pretty much the title. It's kind of like the title of your book. Your book title is Journey to Justice, Finding God and Destiny in darkness. And isn't that generally an opportunity for us when we have these painful and difficult and challenging experiences? And oh my Lord, there's just so much of it. There's just so much of it all over the world. So we know that, you know, these are opportunities as well as experiences for us to look at what really matters. And isn't that what you did, right? I mean, what happened for you is, you know, you started to come to a place where you realized that you were being called in a spiritual way, yes? You want to talk about, mm-hmm. like, when that really hit you, like, when you said, wow, I'm being called, you know, I feel I hear the voice of God, I'm being called in a spiritual way to go out and serve, you know, people in the world.
Well, as far as the ministry that we do now, it was the result of having gone originally to Romania, Moldova, and then to Honduras. And when we left Honduras, just these were short mission trips, my husband and I individually felt like we were leaving home, not going home. And when we returned in 2004, July, we talked to each other and realized that through prayer that God was telling us to go, but we didn't know why we were going, just that God just told us to sell everything and go and leave your jobs. And we did, which was kind of a faith walk as itself. But when we arrived in Honduras, a short time later, the police post in the village collapsed. And it's not like a police station in the States. It's just an adobe building with a desk and a bunk room and a jail cell and an outhouse. And it had collapsed. And we felt like that was our security, and we wanted to help the officers, and nobody would help us. We took it to prayer, and the Lord said in prayer, we felt in our spirit that our entire ministry began with rebuilding it, which we
okay,
did.
Okay, I want to clarify for the audience. The police station, that's not where the police were, right? They were not inhabiting that station, were they?
Yes. The police in Honduras live at work. They only get to go home to their family for 2 days every 15 days.
Oh, my Lord. Wow, that's a lousy job.
and if they live on the other side of the country, they only get to go home for like Christmas and Easter.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's worse than the military, for sure. I hope they at least get paid well. Do they at least get paid well?
No.
When you said that was our security, did you feel that helping them was something that would open doors or assist you? Or, you know, how did you seeing that opportunity as you know, like something to really facilitate things for you? What was your feeling about that when, you know, you wanted to go help rebuild that facility for them?
Well, we'd only been there a few weeks, so we were still thinking like Americans. You know, we were in a foreign country, and it was scary. And the police station, in American minds, the police are our protectors and helpers, you know. And so when we saw the police post collapse, in our minds, as an American, we thought if we helped them, that would help keep our community more secure. We might feel more safe. We weren't doing anything for ourselves. It was just a rational thinking as far as American mind would be, I guess. But
Well, it was definitely a Jimmy Carter moment. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, because we were talking about, you know, current politics, and they said, well, you know, there really aren't any, you know, it doesn't matter what party it is, you've got everybody's on the take and everybody's corrupt and all this. And then she said to me, name one president who was a good person. And I said, yeah, well, he's been my hero for decades, and he's still at it at 95, 96 years old. Jimmy Carter is building houses for, you know, what is it, Homes for Habitat. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is a remarkable human being and a wonderful role model, I think, for all of us. And he didn't get reelected because he wasn't a hawk. You know, he wasn't into war and destruction and killing and all of that stuff. But, so you had a Jimmy Carter moment, and you got the place put back together. And then tell us what happened. There was a wonderful thing that kind of came out of you, helping to restore that facility.
Yes. So I was in the village, since we really didn't know what we were doing, you know, visiting people and talking to them. And my radio, it's this little radio you buy at Walmart, you know, a walkie-talkie. It went on, and they said there were police at the ministry we were at and to come back. So I went back, And when I turned the corner, now when we asked people to help us build the police post, they wouldn't because of all of the corruption and the death squads and the problems with police. So even though the three guys in our village were friends of ours, the police as general were scary. And I turn the corner and I see a police truck and a dozen armed men in camouflage gear with big guns.
Yeah, this is a little terrifying. When you were telling me that story, I was imagining, because we've all seen the films and we've all seen things,
yes.
in South America area where these men are armed and looking really bad.
Oh my gosh! At the time, they would have like operations in the streets, and whenever I drove by, I'd play, "Please God, don't make them stop me," so terrified. But I came into the yard, and the sergeant from our post was there, and he brought me over and introduced me to this very ominous man, tall, arms crossed, gold on his hat, gold on his shoulders, and he tells me his name is Alex Roberto Villanueva Mesa, that he's a colonel. He's in charge of all of the police for the state except for Tegucigalpa. And then he says, and I'm just like nodding my head because my Spanish was really bad at that time. And he says, "We are aware of your activities." And
oh, right.
The first thought that flew through my mind was, "Oh my God, I'm going to prison. What did we do wrong? Have we overstepped?" You know, and there's all these things like lightning went through my brain. I'm like, uh-huh. And then he said that the relationship between the police and the community was not very good with the history and the problems, and that the Minister of Security wanted to rectify that. And he wanted to know if we would stand in the gap and teach the police how to serve and take them with us so the villagers could see them serving and help to restore that or build a relationship between the police and the people. And I thought that was a really interesting opportunity. And we said, sure. And they would go with us. People would call me because they'd see me in the police truck thinking I'd been arrested.
Oh,
and I'd say, no, we're helping the police, And
yeah.
So right after that, he would come to dinner. He was a Christian man, and we would talk, and he discovered my testimony and the advocacy that I had done for women and children. And about 1st of September, we'd been there 8 weeks. 1st of September, the sergeant says, the colonel wants to see me and takes me in the truck to the headquarters. And he begins to tell me about the violence against women and children in Honduras. He tells me that the United Nations, European Union, and all the other big countries were putting pressure on them for having such a violent nation, and they didn't know what to do to help women and children. And they wanted to know if I could create a program for victims of violence. And in my head, I'm thinking, I'm a nobody. Can't you ask like World Vision or somebody? But the word sure just pops out of my mouth. And it was kind of like God wasn't going to let me back out. It was kind of funny. But he gave me the laws and the procedures, and I studied these and the culture for 4 months, destroyed 4 Spanish-English dictionaries. And basically in January of 2006, I presented to him the program thinking I was done, but I wasn't. I handed it to him. He put it aside, and I'm like, aren't you even going to look at it? And this was the moment of destiny. This is what we were called to do. This was God taking everything in my past, the good, the bad, the ugly, the difficult, the painful, and bringing it for what we're doing now. He said, yes, but first, let me take you downstairs to the office we're building for you. You are now chief of special crimes. And I was like, what?
Wow. Yeah, let's back that up a little bit. You went from guys, and there was somebody who was flashing gold teeth, which, of course, is terrifying in and of itself. So you went from guys with big guns and all kinds of ammo strapped to their body and calling you in and really scary stuff, thinking, Lord, what have I gotten myself into? And out of this very terrifying, potentially, frightening and really dangerous situation, you wind up being called to a very high office, a very high place to assist the people of Honduras. So that must have been a pretty remarkable experience, yeah?
It was. I mean, he had to repeat it several times in the office because I just didn't get it. I was like, what? 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 And so he took me downstairs to show me. And on the 20th of February, 2006, generals came from Taguh, national media came, and they installed me into this office as chief of the first. I guess what you could liken it to is a special victims unit, like on Law and Order.
Oh, yeah, right.
First office ever in this country.
Wow.
Special victims unit.
So
and I was in charge of it.
We have to take a break, but I just want to kind of recap this first part because I'm sure people listening are just saying, wait a second. Here's a person who came from humble beginnings, had a very difficult time, traumatized, abused, raped, pregnant, single, abused some more, you know, comes through this whole incredible process. And yet, suddenly, the world opens up. Now, here's the big question. And when we come back from break, I'm going to ask you to answer it. At that time, did you open your heart to the possibilities of what God's love could do for you? Now, you don't have to answer that now, because when we come back from break, I'm going to ask you, Gracie, to share with us where you were. Because, you know, it's kind of like the Job story, you know, and I'm really fond of the Job story because it just challenges everybody, you know, to really test our faith and to see really where we're at. So we're going to take a break. We will be back in a couple of moments. So don't go away, everyone. We will return.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gaz is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
To Gracie Travis McPhee. I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Gracie. Gracie Travis McPhee.
It's Murfree.
Murfree. She is the author of a wonderful book, which is dedicated and about victims of violence. And she has been sharing her incredible story with us about what her journey has been on. And we're going to talk more about her book in great detail later. But what we want to do is continue to focus on her journey and how she got to where she was. So before the break, she's telling us, here she is, you know, coming out of this really kind of traumatic background, being asked to be the first, the director, the leader of the very first program in Honduras for victims of, you know, kind of violence and abuse, and a remarkable, remarkable experience. So at that time, and what I had asked you, is at the time that you were transitioning, before you met your husband, when you were transitioning from one stage to the next while you were maybe going to college and things were starting to get a little better, did you have any idea at that time? What were your thoughts about God working in your life? What kind of thoughts and feelings did you have? Because your story is quite remarkable, and it does kind of it does seem a little like Job, where you're asked to have grace and to have faith in order to move forward. So can you share what that was like for you?
Well, every time somebody would ask me, how did you survive being a victim of domestic violence? How did you survive being a single mother? How did you survive, you know, all of these things that had happened to you? And I would just always respond with, by the grace of God, by the grace of God, by the grace of God. And a friend of mine who was not a Christian, back in about 94 or 95, said to me that he was tired of hearing me say grace of God, and said they might as well just call me Gracie. And the name sort of stuck at that point.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. And so I sort of became Gracie, and the Lord was showing me that as Abram became Abraham and Sarai became Sarah and Saul became Paul and Simon became Peter, that God was giving me a new identity because my identity was so broken from before. Mm-hmm. And he gave me actually a scripture. It's 1 Corinthians 15:10, and it says, I am who I am by the grace of God, and his grace in me is not without effect. So his grace created me to be the person I am, gave me the identity of who I am, and his grace in me is not without effect. All this you see with our home for girls pregnant by rape and incest, with our refuge, with our office for victims, the whole ministry, everything that we're doing, all of this is a result of his grace in me.
Absolutely. And we have to give your husband a nod here because
yes.
He is also, you know, he's also working. He's a minister. He's also dedicated his life to service and to, you know, healing and curing and loving. And so we have to give him a nod. How have the both of you, how is your organization? Because you do have an organization, which is, let me see if I've got this correctly. I know it is housed in Arkansas, correct?
No, Huntsville, Alabama.
Oh, Alabama. Okay. Okay, Huntsville, Alabama. And your organization is in the States, and you have people who actually do the paperwork and what have you. But you live in Honduras. So your organization, how has it been able to flourish and provide these things like a justice center and the crisis office, et cetera? How are you able to financially, create that?
We have an amazing group of people in several different states who donate to the ministry, their churches and individuals. And frequently my husband and or I will come back to visit in these churches or have justice meetings, and we receive donations. We're a 501c3 based out of Huntsville, Alabama. And so it's people. There's no money from any government that helps us at all, not a penny.
Wow, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that fantastic? So you've kind of got a little bit of a Mother Teresa thing going on here. And
No, she's amazing.
I meant she started with nothing, and it was by the she always says it's by the grace of God. I mean, that's exactly. You know, she was given what she needed to do the work that she did. I was very blessed. I actually met Mother Teresa many years ago. She was up I was working for the Christian television station here in the Boston area, and she was up, she was at a church in Newton, and I actually got to see her twice. Once was at Harvard, and the other one was, at the church. And, her whole thing was that if, it was kind of like build it and they will come, so to speak, like the movie Field of Dreams. It's kind of mm-hmm. like when we commit ourselves. So you had committed yourself to this mm-hmm. work, and you committed yourself to these people. Excuse me, and you were given exactly what you needed to do what you're doing. So tell us a little bit about some of the stories. I know you must have killer stories, real painful and yet joyful and wonderfully hopeful stories that have come out of the work that you do.
Well, let me tell you about Michelle. She's a little girl that we received 7 years ago. She was 12 years old, and she was 5 months pregnant.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And her father died when she was six, and from six and a half on, she was abused by all the boyfriends and an uncle and of her mother. She never went to school, not a single day, not a single day in school. She was cutting tomatoes, cutting cucumbers, cutting coffee, or she was picking up bottles on the side of the road, or she was sent to the dump by her mother to dig through the trash for clothes that they could sell, that they could clean and sell. And so she was brought to us when her belly started growing, and neighbors told the police, and the prosecutor brought her to us, and she had her baby with us. And her daughter, Catherine, will be seven in December. And Michelle, right now, she has completed with honors in 7 years, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th, 11th, and will be graduating from 12th grade on the first week of December.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? I mean, one of the most dangerous ages, they say older women, I was 46 when I had my last baby, and that's supposed to be risky. That's nothing compared to a 12-year-old.
No.
When you are a child, having a child, wow, how did they bring her through that physically, emotionally? I mean, just the whole process and what was done to help her raise this child. Can you tell us all about that?
Well, she's lived with us. We have the home for girls pregnant by rape and incest. When we were rescuing women and children, we discovered there was no place in the country for little girls who were pregnant by rape and incest or being sold as sex slaves. They would just go to a government orphanage, which was like a juvenile detention center, because their families were accomplices to what happened. So Michelle has lived with us in our girls' home this whole time. We've had counseling for her and programs to help build her self-esteem, to help her learn how to be a mother, our nurse, our nanny, our educators. They've all worked with her, and she's an amazing young girl. She wants to go to college, and right now she actually, for almost a year now, she's been working in our victim's crisis office 4 hours on Monday and 4 hours on Friday. And whenever girls or clients are brought into our refuge or our home, she reaches out to them and helps them. And so you wanted a difficult story, but with a good outcome. There's a perfect example of redemption and a restoration story.
Right. How is she psychologically, and how is her child? I mean, did the people who did this to her, were they ever prosecuted or brought to justice? Because I know you're all about justice. There's an expression that's on your site that says, your book site, when justice is done, it brings joy to the righteous, but terror to the evildoers. And that's from the Bible. That's from Proverbs, I believe, 21:15. So
yes.
What was the outcome? I mean, what became of those who had violated her?
Well, the man who had raped her, arrest warrant was issued. We were never able to capture him. However, he got himself into trouble with somebody else, and he was murdered.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. So I guess, you know, they say that things kind of resolve themselves, you know.
That one has kind of resolved itself, yes. But Catherine is an amazing, smart, lovely, beautiful, loving little girl. And Michelle is an amazing mother. She is an amazing young lady. And they're such a blessing.
That's fantastic. What other stories do you have? I know it's been all kinds of things. You've had domestic violence, and you're covering a whole lot of stuff, and you're covering justice issues. So I'm sure that not all of it is that physical abuse, but maybe legally abusive things, or you know, materially abusive things. What other kinds of individuals have come to you? You know, people who have maybe been disabled by others, or you know, in some way have lost the ability to really take care of themselves, maybe, and they need to get back on their feet.
We receive a lot of women from domestic violence, because the machismo culture, machismo is Spanish for machoism. The culture there is that the woman and the children are the property of the man, just like the pigs and the dogs in the yard. And with the drug traffickers and the gang violence, there's kind of a machismo on steroids with the men in those activities. So we're always receiving women who have been victims of domestic violence. Like Gloria is, her story is told in my book in the chapter Love Called Her Name. She had gone to the police several times for help because her husband had beaten and tortured her for over 18 years and had even raped his own daughter. And he had actually carved his name in her back with a machete twice, and no other man would have them. And he was actually my first death threat. He was the first person who, to my knowledge, threatened to murder me. But we were able to rescue her and her daughter, and he was convicted and went to prison, and she began a new life. And there are others who have run away from Honduras because they couldn't get away from their abusers and the connections that their abusers have, and they ran to the States. We helped them as much as we could, and we couldn't help them anymore, and they just ran off to the United States in the caravans to escape the violence here. We couldn't keep them safe. And then there was a baby that the mother gave birth on the top of a mountain 3 hours from us and left her to die.
Oh, my Lord!
Still connected to the placenta, and she was found at 6 hours, and the prosecutor handed her to us at 12 hours old, limp and half dead, and said, if this child can survive, we know it will happen here. And the mother went to prison for 2 years for child abuse, reckless child abuse that could almost cause a death or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she did her time, and then she fought to get her daughter back. And she was actually just reunited with baby Dulce. Dulce's 5 now, 6 now, actually. She's had a birthday since she left, but just before Christmas last year. That was a beautiful redemption story of someone who realized the wrong that they had done. And despite the shame, that's a story like mine. Despite the shame, despite all the things against her, she fought to get her daughter back, and we helped her. We put her through parenting school, and just worked really hard with the government. And that was just a tragic story at the start that was a beautiful story at the end.
Yeah, that sounds like a really, really good one. I know the next thing I want to talk about is part of the moment of destiny, which is in your book, and we're going to get to that. But you talk about something that's equally as lovely. You talk about your husband's awareness of his destiny and his job to reflect. How can we tell these children, or how can we tell them God the Father loves them when the only father they know beats, abandons, rapes, and harms? And that for your husband, being a godly father to all who enter, that's such a beautiful sentiment. And your husband obviously has a very beautiful heart and calling. Would you tell us about his role in in the situations, because there are a lot of obviously mostly women who are involved, and yet your husband has come forth to be a strong and caring godly man in the midst of all of this.
Yes, I'm really glad you brought that up, because as before, when I said the grace in me, this is reflexive, but it's him too. It's not just me. It's the two of us together. He is the prayer warrior. Now, while Jesus is the foundation, because that's what my faith is, God is using him as a foundation spiritually for this ministry. When I go out the gate, he prays me home alive. When I'm out on missions, he's covering me and the police in prayer to make sure that we come home safe. He also, he says his ministry is Papi, P-A-P-I, and everyone would say, well, what does that mean? But it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, and it's such a huge testimony to the power of God. He is representing God the Father, because as I told you earlier, and as you just said, how can we tell them that God the Father loves them when the only father they know beats, abuses, rapes, murders, kids, all of that stuff? So he has this patience to work with the children and teach the children and to love on the girls. And he gives them their space. And they're actually the girls that we rescued. They're the ones that decided, that gave him the name Poppy. They're the ones that gave him that name. And so he says that his job is to be an example of a godly, loving father in a world where one doesn't exist, or in a country where one doesn't exist, to every person who comes in the gate, whether it be a police officer or a judge or a client or a missionary, everybody who comes in that gate, his job is to demonstrate a loving, humble, caring, patient, godly father.
What a wonderful, wonderful calling for him. What a joy for you and these people and your children. What could be better than a compassionate, caring, loving, strong, grounded man with a heart open to God? That's really wonderful, and it's so touching to hear that. We are coming close to the next break. And then we will have about 10, 12 minutes left. So what I want to do is take the break now. When we come back, let's talk about your book. Because the book is, it's got a lot of information and things that we want to talk about. I just have to tell you, I love that expression, praying me back or praying me home. I hear people use it, and it's so lovely, pray me home. That's really quite a lovely thing. And, not everyone listening is a Christian, but everyone listening is a human, and I think that because I've interviewed people of every walk of life and every spiritual and religious background, and what's really wonderful is that when we get into the weeds with heart and humanity, it's all the same, It's the compassion and the kindness and the respect and treating people with the love that we would want to be treated with. So it's a wonderful conversation we're having. I'm very excited to have you on. We're going to be back very shortly with Gracie. We're going to take our next break, so don't go away.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected
basically the who's who of integrative health, and they brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, and develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
Travis Murphy, who is, I don't even know what to call her, a minister, a teacher, a leader, an inspiration. She's so many things, wears so many hats. She's been sharing her wonderful walk and her wonderful ministry and the work that she and her husband do in Honduras. And before the break, we were talking about, her book. She has written a book. You want to talk about your book, the name of your book, and I love the subtitle of the book. It's really quite wonderful. Do you want to share that? And then let's start talking about what's in the book, Gracie, okay?
Okay. Well, the book is titled Journey to Justice because it's a journey that we're on, and I don't think the journey will ever end. I talk about that in the beginning, in the introduction, that just because it says Journey to Justice doesn't mean it's over. It's just begun. And the subtitle, Finding God and Destiny in Darkness. My husband and I, we joke and tell everybody that we work in the dark side of ministry. You know, kind of like Darth Vader almost is the image that we have in our mind. You know, we go into all of these dark, horrible, difficult, messy places. And that's basically by going into one of the most violent places on earth that has one of the highest murder rates in the world. Doing what we do, rescuing women and children. I mean, if you think about it, a girl who's trapped in sex trafficking or a woman who's being abused by her husband or a child who's being raped by a family member, those are dark places. And I think if God doesn't show up, what hope do they have? And so that's kind of the vision that we had, is going into dark places and bringing people out into light and love and restoration.
How wonderful, how extraordinary. It really touches the heart to hear this. Why do you think Honduras has such a violent culture?
I think a lot of it comes from the history of the oppression that they had. We're talking hundreds of years back and so forth. And the biggest problem that there is now is the gang violence, the drug cartels that transport drugs through the country, the corruption, and then the machismo attitudes, the attitudes of violence against women and children, that they have no value, no worth. They're trying to come out of it, but it's very difficult. It's not something that's going to change overnight.
No, that's for darn sure. Let's talk about your book, the parts of your book, because you introduced, there are basically three parts to it, and you introduced me to the first part, and I thought, I love it. It's just like, pray me home. Benefits of walking obedience. I love that, walking obedience. So let's talk about part one. You've got three parts to the book. Why don't you tell us about part one, and what that means, and about, it's really kind of like being present to what is. But talk about walking obedience for us, okay?
Mm-hmm. For me, walking obedience, it's tied to my faith that when we listen to the voice of God, we don't always have to have a reason why he asks us to do something. For example, he didn't tell us why we were going to Honduras. He said, go. The fact of the matter is, if he had told us in 2004 why he was sending us to Honduras, we would never have gone. It was too big to imagine working with presidents and first ladies and working and affecting an entire hemisphere, never mind just the country of Honduras, or never mind just the village. But it was also too dangerous for our minds to understand that God could protect us with all the death threats and the attempts that have been made on my life, because it's my fault men go to prison for raping 12-year-olds, not their fault, But that's kind of a funny saying that they have down there. But, so it's like when we walk in this obedience, when we hear the voice of God leading and directing us, we don't have to know why. We just need to follow it. And as we follow it, it places us to become strategically positioned to be the answer to a problem, which is the destiny that we've been called for in our lives.
Isn't that well said? That's really well said. You and I talked at the pre-interview about Job. Kind of sounds like a Job thing, it's like, why is this happening? Why are you doing this, God? And I don't know what you want me to do. What do I do? Do I rage against what's happening? Do I accept? Do I listen? So the whole idea of walking obedience is really to listen and to understand that there is purpose. There is purpose to the communication that we're receiving and the things we're being asked to do. I just watched a show the other night. It was a TV program about, it was kind of a do-over for, people who needed some help. And there was this, he was a paraplegic. He had been paralyzed by a shot, a gunshot in his lower spine. And this was a gang person who was, he expected to be dead by 21 anyway. And he said that what happened to him, of course, the first 2 years was terrible, and he was very upset and awful the way he took it and everything. And now, 5 years later, he realizes this was the most beautiful thing that has happened in his life and who it's turned him into, what it's made him be. And I'm sure that a lot of the people you're working with, do you see that? Do you see that with the people that you're, really coming to their care and to their aid with, that they come to the other side where they go, wow, this is a gift from God?
Well, I don't believe that the actual, I don't believe that me being drugged and a man having sex with me against my will was that God made that happen. But we're in a fallen world where bad things happen. But I do believe that God takes those things to turn around for something better. And it's not just like the people who we are serving in Honduras who are being encouraged and having their lives restored, but it's also the staff in Honduras and our followers who follow us. I've heard stories of people who are like, I'm going through this horrible, horrible thing, but I see what's going on with you. I know what you've been through. I know what you're going through now, and God has made this all beautiful, so I know it'll happen for me too. And even employees who were ready to run and hide because gang members had shot, there's one employee in particular that gang members had shot her son, and they were threatening murder. And we helped them stand and the people went to jail. And instead of running away, you know, they're learning that God takes these things that are horrible and difficult and painful, and then he can use them to redeem somebody else.
Yes, exactly. I was going to say it's not the horror or the violence or the act of of being violated. It's the redemption, and it's the resurrection of the soul and the remarkable presence of the divine, you know, where God reveals himself, you know, so clearly in the outcome of what you're doing. I cannot believe we only have a few minutes left. So I want to leap on. It's gone by so fast, Gracie. The number two part of the book is God's Heart for Justice. And you said it's the second most prominent theme, used a Hebrew word which meant to make things right. And you said God's judgment in our society of how we treat the most vulnerable is how God views us. And what you and I both said, given, the culture we live in, or you don't live in it anymore, but given the culture that we Americans live in, the failure to serve and help these vulnerable people is such a violation of justice and just God's love and God's justice for all of us that, it's a very frightening time. It's a really frightening time in our world today. And you said God's heart is for the broken, invisible, and unseen, the undesirables. And where have we been hearing that lately? Where have we been hearing this terrible, lack of regard, respect, and dignity for people who we don't want to care for? And last but not least, you said God is using broken people to heal the nations. So talk quickly about, if you wouldn't mind, I know you've been doing this work and you continue to do this work and it's kind of expanding. Tell us about, where you are, how people can get more information about your organization, about the work that you're doing, and maybe even contribute to some of the things that you're doing.
Okay. Well, my desire is that everyone would personally know that no matter what they've been through, no matter how broken they are, God can use that to help others and does want to use them to make a difference. And then that's just like the most important thing to me, that if people can understand, no matter how broken they are, that God wants to use that to make a difference in the lives of the other. We're all broken. That's just the bottom line. We're all broken. As far as the ministry, you can find us on hocjusticeproject.org. That's our website. We also have
that's the Heart of Christ, right?
HOC for Heart of Christ.
HOC.org or Honduras.
No.
HOC Honduras.
No, there's two websites, but the one from the Justice Project is hocjusticeproject.org. That gives all the information on the Justice Project.
Wonderful, wonderful.
And then we also have a YouTube channel. I have a podcast that's called Testify that goes out every Thursday. We have we're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And we also have various ways you can find out how to give there. You can text to give. You can text the word justice. Am I allowed to share this?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. you can text the word justice to the phone number 256-253-5133.
And if you do that, will they also be able to get your updates and your information?
Yes, they'll get put on the mailing list, and they can friend me on Facebook, and I'll put them in our group where they can get information daily on what goes on.
Fantastic. Now, listeners, Gracie will have a page on Living Above the Drama, and you all know there are individual pages for each of our guests. There'll be a page for her with her contact information and how you can get a hold of her. And I just want to tell you that this has been, for me, it's been a wonderful interview because I'm a news junkie in a way, and I read about all of these things that are going on in the world. And sometimes when we're listening to the news or we're paying attention to what's going on, we don't hear about the wonderful work that people like you and your husband are doing. So thank you so much for bringing light and bringing hope and joy to people's lives and for sharing all of this with us today and Living Above the Drama. And I wish you
every best, you know, outcome with the work that you're doing, Gracie.
Thank you so much. You have been such a blessing, and I have so enjoyed talking to you, too. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. And listeners, don't forget to join us again next week for another moving, inspiring, and educational program here on Living Above the Drama.